Sunburst Media Productions. This is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host, Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
You want the truth? Seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank
Woo!
You.
Yeah.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 30th of December, 2013. This is the last Spectrum 360 program for the year of 2013. Spectrum 360 started this year on Monday, the 2nd of September, 2013. So we've been on the air a few months. This is the last program for 2013. Looking forward to continuing Spectrum 360 in the new year 2014. I'm your host, Mark Skogman. On Spectrum 360, in this edition, segment one, we are going to address the issue of climate change and discuss the film Chasing Ice, which has excellent evidence of climate change in it. So we'll be speaking about the film Chasing Ice, climate change. We'll listen to audio of the preview of the film, the so-called trailer. I also have a segment from the film where it shows in the film the cinematographers actually video recording the largest calving event from a glacier ever recorded in visual media. That means film or video. Very spectacular part of that film, probably the most important thing to me. We have the audio of that segment from the film as well. Also, in the film, it included a song. The song was entitled Before My Time. It was, the vocal was by Scarlett Johansson, and it also had the violinist Joshua Bell perform it. It was nominated for an Academy Award, and it lost to the title track for from the film Skyfall that was performed by Adele. So we'll be airing that film, or excuse me, airing that song as well on the program. And we'll have other things as well. Also, in segment two, we're going to have an interview live by telephone with the former co-host of this program, Reverend Bruce Wright. We're going to speak briefly about the Reverend Billy Graham and the fact that he is in poor health and what his legacy is to the United States and to Christianity and to the nation and his connection with many, many presidents for decades. We're going to have a brief retrospective about Billy Graham. That's in the first half of the program. In the second half of the program, as promised last week, we're going to have... I promised that we were going to have some best-of segments of previous Spectrum 360 programs, and I'm going to do that in the second half of the program. Actually, it's going to be one long segment. It's going to be 17 minutes of the interview that I conducted on Monday, the 25th of November, 2013, with Robert Groden. People listen to this program regularly know that Robert Groden is one of the best, if not the best, expert on the assassination of John F. Kennedy on 22 November 1963. We'll be reprising that interview, the first segment of it, about the first half. And it's very good indeed. And that's, I believe that that interview was probably one of the most important interviews I've ever conducted. Certainly the most important interview that I conducted this year. And most certainly the most important interview that I've conducted on Spectrum 360 since we started the program on 2 September 2013. So reprising that. I've also got a little send off. Tomorrow is New Year's Eve, and then Wednesday is going to be New Year's Day 2014. I've got a comedy song to send off people to go party on New Year's Eve with, and then we'll wrap the program after that. So that's what's on Spectrum 360 in this edition. Let's get right to it, shall we? Okay, I want to speak about climate change, which climate change, whether it's happening or not, whether it's, quote, real or not, unquote, is still a controversy and still controversial with some people. It is not with me. Climate change is real. Okay, let's get real with the subject, people. And I understand people have a right to their opinions, and I support that. I support people's constitutional right to free speech and their opinions. So you have a right to your own opinion, but you don't have a right to your own facts. The famous quote from, I believe that was Dan Pat, as I used to like to call him, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, former U.S. senator. But anyway, so climate change. I'd like to make a general statement to start the discussion here on climate change, and that is this. I want to see human civilization be successful on this planet. I would think most people would agree with that, except maybe people that are suicidal. Maybe some of those people wouldn't, but most people would agree with that. And I think most people would also agree that to have a successful civilization, adult human beings need to be able to understand and effectively deal with concepts that are higher than an elementary school level. How many people out there agree with that? Raise your hands. Of course, I can't see you. This is radio. Ah, I saw a hand. It was in the control room. Yes, a shout out to our great studio control room engineer here at WTAN, Cedric Harris. Yes, Cedric. Woohoo! Yeah. Yeah, he's great. He makes a big contribution to this program. I do want to recognize him for the work that he's done in this program this year. This program is as good as it is in large part because of his engineering skills in the control room of this program. So thank you, Cedric Harris. Thanked him on the air. And that's because I didn't get him a Christmas present. I'm sorry. I wasn't here at the station on Christmas. I played you all that Christmas music last week. That was your Christmas present to all the listeners as well. Okay, back to climate change. So, the cause is what some people call global warming. I like to call it atmospheric warming because I think it explains what's warming much better than global warming. When you see the term global warming, well, what on the globe is warming? It's the atmosphere, okay? We're at approximately 450 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which is way higher than any known historical amount of carbon in the atmosphere in terms of concentration of parts per million. Okay, now, Bill McKibben of 350.org, the reason he named his environmental website 350.org is because 350 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere is really the most that we're going to be able to sustain and not have sweeping, dramatic climate change, which is going to have a very negative effect on human civilization. Okay? Now, so the cause is atmospheric warming or global warming. Now, the effect is climate change. Okay? There's cause and effect. That's very simple. Anybody with an elementary school education could understand that. So I think that sorts out these terms in a way that people can understand them better. People say, oh, you know, global warming. Well, yeah, there's global warming. It's atmospheric warming, and that's leading to climate change. Now, here's some important aspects of climate change. Climate change means that the atmosphere is going to get warmer, so the average world temperature is going to get warmer. What that's going to do is that's going to produce more severe storms and a warming atmosphere, so warmer weather overall, but there's other effects as well. And people think this is paradoxical when it really isn't. One of the effects of climate change, because of the cause of atmospheric warming is that it disrupts the climate, so it becomes less predictable and also more violent. So the extremes in weather that you get are going to be more exacerbated. They're going to be a wider range of them. So violent storms are going to get worse. There's going to be disruption of normal rainfall patterns. There's going to be a global temperature rise in the atmosphere overall, which is going to create hotter weather, which is going to create higher water vapor levels in the atmosphere, which is going to contribute to more and more violent storms and more violent hurricanes. And also, it's going to contribute to the warming of the oceans as well. So these all things are connected, but one is cause, the other is effect. Now, when it comes to climate change and the effects and the disruption of our climate system, you know, sometimes what's going to happen is violent weather is going to take place, and we're going to have extreme snowfalls. We're going to have a lot more ice in places where there is ice sometimes, but that is not going to be the long-term effect of climate change. The long-term effect is going to, it's going to be just what I've already discussed. But because there's it's going to be less predictable in the short term, and because these storms and other things are going to become more violent and less predictable, people say, well, you know, I remember Sean Hannity on his program on Fox, you know, said, you know, there's nothing that disproves that there's climate change to people that believe in climate change. You know, it gets hotter, it's climate change. It gets colder, it's climate change. Well, you know, actually, that's true. And it's the long-term patterns that are most important, not the short-term. Because any one event, you know, people that argue against climate change, you know, say, oh, this one event doesn't prove that. Well, they're right. They're right. Any one event does not necessarily prove that theory. It's the long-term effects. Now, when you see that the atmosphere is has turned in its hottest years over and over again over the last several years, when most of the hottest years on record have been in the last 10 to 15 years, that's telling you something. Now, we've got important information in the film Chasing Ice, and it's very dramatic, and it really confirms exactly what we already know. So we're going to talk about that, and I want to just play you something that basically describes what some people feel about this issue. Now, that's what some people believe is going to happen to the climate. Well, hopefully it's going to go better than that. I just wanted to cheer people up a little bit. You know, let's have a little fun. It's the last program of the year. It's the day before New Year's Eve. So this is what the eve of New Year's Eve day. So we're having a radio program. Okay, on the line, we have with me Terry Weeks, who's a local environmental activist. She also happens to be the associate producer of this program, and we're going to have her on the program occasionally as a commentator to speak about various subjects. Terry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Terry, welcome to the program.
Here.
Now, what is your take on Chasing Ice? I know you've seen the film, and I know for a fact that you've seen it multiple times. I believe you've seen it 4 to 5 times. Is that correct?
I don't know how you would possibly know that, but yes, I have. Chasing Ice is an amazing film. The imagery, which is time-lapse photography of glaciers retreating, is just remarkable and very disturbing. To me, I equated it with really watching someone I love die.
Wow.
Very disturbing and very...
Well, that's a strong statement. You know, I feel the same way sometimes. It's like seeing someone die, especially, you know, the glaciers that are keeping the climate system stable as they melt. Everyone's got to see this film, Chasing Ice. And a little bit about Chasing Ice. I was in Denver in last year in November. I was in Denver on business, and I happened to see an advertisement in a newspaper I was reading for the film Chasing Ice. I'd never heard about it before. I went to the Chez Artiste Theater in Denver. Gotta love that name. French name for this theater. It's an independent theater. And saw the film, and it was great. It's an hour and 15 minutes, and it's about James Balog and his journey through going from being a climate change denier to a climate change theory supporter, and the very dramatic evidence that he accumulated during this, what's called the Extreme Ice Survey Project, where they went out and actually set up time-lapse cameras, which I'm fond of doing that myself, and they recorded the effect of weather on glaciers over the last few years. And there are dramatic meltings of the great glaciers worldwide, all over. And there's a huge amount of evidence that this is happening.
And I don't think if anyone can sit through this film and not come out thinking something very extraordinary is happening in the modern age, I don't know what to say. And in fact, a lot of times they talk about a climate change debate. There really is no debate about this. 97% of climate experts right now agree that climate change is happening, and they agree that humans are causing it. If you look at the temperatures, you talked a little bit about short-term versus long-term.
Yes.
You're going to see some short-term variability. We're changing. So you're going to see short-term volatility. But if you follow the long-range trend, the curve is steadily going up, 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 and up.
I totally agree with that.
Exactly with CO2 emissions that have increased startlingly since the beginning of the industrial age.
Thank you for that comment. I'm going to play the trailer now so people can get a feel, get a flavor for the film.
I'm on the phone with Jim on one of our regular check-ins. Like, Jim, nothing's happening.
It's starting, Adam, I think. Adam, it's starting.
Look at that. Look at the whole thing.
It all started in Iceland.
I think I'm so certain to get wet, I'll take my boots off.
Oh, yeah, he did.
I never imagined that you could see glaciers this big disappearing in such a short time. There's a powerful piece of history that's unfolding in these pictures, and I have to go back. The initial goal was to put out 25 cameras for 3 years, shoot every hour as long as it was daylight. That would show you how the landscape was changing.
Oh, this is the way to travel, my friend.
Putting really delicate electronics in the harshest conditions on the planet.
It's not the nicest environment for technology.
I do not want to go any lower than this. It's just bottomless.
I'm going out here on this broken fin, and I assume it won't collapse.
Every once in a while, I get sane. What were you thinking? Maybe that office job wasn't so bad.
This thing is loose.
Rock!
It's not working.
God!
All of that obsession means nothing if it doesn't work.
Just be careful. Don't get too close to the edge, all right?
This is terrifying.
His knee has had two surgeries, and it really could use a third.
He goes to that point where he can't anymore, and sometimes he's going further.
We have low operation engine number two.
This is big stuff happening right now.
Okay, onward.
The memory of the landscape. That landscape is gone. It may never be seen again in the history of civilization, and it's stored right here.
Wow, there's the trailer for the film Chasing Ice. Dramatic trailer and a dramatic film indeed. Terry, what's your take on the on that trailer? You've seen the film.
I think it pretty much gives you a taste of what's going on there. Not only from a, you know, climate change and scientific perspective is it an interesting film, but from a, just a technical cinematography achievement. What this guy did doing the time-lapse photography of glaciers has never been tried before. He had to invent his own technology to even get this footage. And then he and his crew went out there at tremendous physical risk to themselves. To place the cameras and take all these images. It's, if you're even just interested in cinematography, it's worth seeing because it's amazing.
Well, I'm into cinematography, and I do remember that part of the film where they had a big challenge in creating the microcomputers that were going to do the time-lapse timing for the still cameras that actually recorded the glaciers. That was quite a challenge, but they did it.
And they had to start over.
Yes, exactly. And one of the things that they caught, which was very dramatic, was the largest glacier calving event ever recorded on visual media. I'm talking about film or video. And here's a segment that has some documentation of that.
I'm on the phone with Jim on one of our regular check-ins. Like, Jim, just nothing's happening.
Hey, Jim. It's going well. We had some serious bouts of wind, but other than that, things are fairly well set up here. We've got
some continuous time lapse going.
It's starting, Adam. I think Adam is starting.
Oh wait, Jim. This is the big piece is starting to cast. Let me call you back.
Call him back.
Okay, bye.
Still going?
Yeah. In that V section right there.
Hold that big bird rolling.
All four are running, right?
Yeah. Look at that. You see how? Look at the whole thing.
What you're seeing in the film, when you listen to this audio, is this huge glacier face that's calving into the water, into the ocean. And it's bigger. It looks to me like it's bigger than a World War II, or even a current United States Navy aircraft carrier. That's how big this piece of ice is. Very dramatic. That's what you're hearing, is the calving.
The calving face is 300, sometimes 400 feet tall. Pieces of ice were shooting up out of the ocean 600 feet and then falling. The only way that you can really try to put it into scale with human reference is if you imagine Manhattan. And all of a sudden, all of those buildings just start to rumble and quake and peel off and just fall over and roll around. This whole massive city just breaking apart in front of your eyes. We're just observers, these two little dots on the side of the mountain. And we watched and recorded the largest witness calving event ever caught on tape.
So how big was this calving event that we just looked at? We'll resort to some illustrations again to give you a sense of scale. It's as if the entire lower tip of Manhattan broke off, except that the thickness, the height of it, is equivalent to buildings that are 2.5 or 3 times higher than they are. That's a magical, miraculous, horrible, scary thing. I don't know that anybody's really seen the miracle and horror of that. It took 100 years for it to retreat 8 miles from 1900 to 2000. From 2000 to 2010, it retreated 9 miles. So in 10 years, it retreated more than it had in the previous 100.
Wow. Listen to that. Did you hear what James Baylock said? That is dramatic evidence of glacial melt and also of climate change itself. Now, I'm going to play the film theme song, which was nominated for an Academy Award. It lost, but it should have won just based on its content alone. It's also a beautiful, beautiful song.
Cold feet, don't fail me now. So much left to do. If I should run 10,000 miles home, would you be there? Just a taste of things to come. I still smile, but I don't want to die alone. I don't want to die alone. Way before time.
I gave it.
calm and carry on. No worse for the wear. I don't want to die alone. I don't want to die alone. Way before my time. Is it any wonder all this empty air I'm drowning in the laughter way before my time has come.
And there you have the song Before My Time, featuring Scarlett Johansson on vocals and Joshua Bell on that great violin. That's great violin playing in that song. I believe that that should have won the Academy Award for Best Song last year, and it did not. It should have. It's a very important topic. It should have won the Academy Award. But anyway, I just want to dedicate that song to the young generations and the future young generations that are going to be born into this crisis. And for people that are tempted to say that the older generations have not done their job, that's largely true. But I want to say it's not true of me. I remember the first Earth Day in 1970. I'm that old. And also, you know when I started recycling? 1980, you know? I've been doing this for a while, so you can't blame me for climate change. I've been doing my part. Anyway, this is Spectrum 360. We're going to go to break in a short time here. And we're going to come back with Robert Groden, interview segment one from that great interview on November 25th. We have not been able to get in contact with Bruce Wright yet for his brief segment about Billy Graham. We hope to get him on the line. If we do, we'll get him on. Remember, like us on Facebook and podcast at www.tantalk1340.com. Stay with us.
NBC News Radio, I'm Melissa Rayberger. With many areas in the east still covered in snow, another big chill is descending on the Midwest. Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass reports this New Year's Eve may be a good time to stay inside.
It's going to be too cold for any extended period of time outside, especially in the Midwest. We're talking dangerous cold air, temperatures not even getting above zero for a high in parts of Minnesota, Wisconsin, back into the Dakotas as well.
It is so cold that some ski resorts have closed. This storm is also forecast to bring more snow to the northeast on Wednesday. New York Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio says he wants to replace the city's horse-drawn carriages with antique electric cars.
We've always said we're going to work with the existing drivers to try and give them that other alternative, which is the electric vehicles that we think will be a safer, wiser, more humane alternative that will be very appealing to tourists.
De Blasio and advocacy groups who support him say it's inhumane to make the horses work in the dangerous city streets. This is NBC News Radio.
This is John Austin, host of Tan Talks The Book Club, a program that spotlights undiscovered authors and their books. If you are a published author and feel that your book has not had the exposure it deserves and you would like to be considered for a guest spot in the book club, email your name, the title of your book, along with a brief synopsis of the book to bookclub1340@gmail.com. Be sure to include your contact information. And
be sure and join me, John Austin, on The Book Club every Tuesday morning at 10 on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
For all your home repair needs, call Ed's Handyman Services at 727-224-8681. For example, toilets, faucet, door locks, and much, much more. Impeccable quality work and reliable real-time service at an astonishing affordable price. Ed provides a clean, safe work environment from start to finish. Licensed, bonded, and insured, Ed guarantees all his work. So call Ed now at 727-224-8681.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tan Talk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge
is all. On your drive home Monday evening, listen to Your PC Hero, a brand new time, Monday evening from 5 until 6. Alan Barabi.
Check out our website, yourpchero.com.
And the Shogun.
Alan,
yes,
I've decided that the world is not big enough for me anymore. I am changing my name to Shogun of Universal World Peace.
Your PC Hero, new time, 5 to 6, Monday evening drive time, here on Tantalk.
Prescription Addiction Radio Show, Breaking the Silence. New time, 5 to 7. Drive time, Tuesdays. I am Larry G. Along with Montana, we talk about the topics nobody else is talking about. OxyContin, Vicodin, Xanax, Prozac, Lexapro, Seroquel, Cymbalta, heroin, and even marijuana. You don't know about drugs until you listen to the Prescription Addiction Radio Show. Brought to you by Novus Medical Detox and Suncoast Rehabilitation. Tuesday nights, 5 to 7.
Tune in to the Dating Jungle Show every Thursday night at 10 p.m. with your host, Tara Richter, certified dating coach and author of 3 books in the Dating Jungle series, available on Amazon. Join us on a safari through your heart into the wilderness of love as we discuss fun topics such as internet dating, dating after divorce, and how to find the one. Call into the show, get free dating advice from Tara on Thursday nights from 10 to 11 p.m. every week on Tan Talk Radio, 1340 a.m. in Tampa Bay.
This is Michael, host of the Blind Matters Radio Show. And now we're on 1340 and 1400 on your AM dial. Every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5, we have a new show that's catered to the low vision, legally blind, and the blind community, people like myself. Tune in, listen, learn, and have fun every Saturday from 3 to 5.
Mr. Murray!
Yes?
I'm calling you from Egypt. How are you?
From Egypt? And how
I'm
are
calling
it?
You from Egypt.
And how are things in Egypt?
Egypt is great. We're chanting Buddy, Verdi, Buddy, Verdi, Buddy, Verdi.
Oh, how nice.
We love your program over here. We love it.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. From Egypt, no less. How about that?
The Buddy Verdi Show, big band music every Saturday afternoon from 1 until 3 here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back. This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, 30th of December, 2013. I'm your host, Mark Skogman. That was John Mellencamp. Love that song. Life is hard. Yeah, I've experienced that a few times. Got to be saved. That's what he says. I love it when he does that. It just makes me laugh. And he went to the same kind of church I did when he grew up. Very conservative. Very out there church, non-mainstream, you know, black trousers and white shirts only, you know, that kind of thing. I'm somewhat familiar with that myself, so me and John have some things in common. Anyway, okay, I'd like to thank Cherry Weeks, associate producer of this program, for appearing in the first half of the program and commenting on our segment on climate change. And that great film, Chasing Ice. I've seen that film 7 times. I've seen it all over the country. I've seen it in Denver. I've seen it in Tampa. I've seen it in St. Petersburg. I've seen it on television when it was on Nat Geo. So, now we're going to go to our segment with Robert Groden. This is a replay of an interview that I did with Robert Groden on Monday, the 25th of November, 2013. This is about the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. Now, he has a lot of good new information about the Kennedy assassination that absolutely proves that it was a conspiracy, that Lee Harvey Oswald was not the shooter. He couldn't have been, since he was on the second floor of the building and not the sixth, with people watching him. and many other facts as well. Very interesting. This is the first half of the interview that I did with Robert Groden. We're going to reprise it here because I believe it's so important. At 17 minutes, 48 seconds. Enjoy. We'll come back with more Spectrum 360 after this interview. And that was the trailer, the audio from the trailer of the film JFK, produced by Oliver Stone. An interesting note, Robert J. Groden was a consultant on that film and actually appears as an actor in the film three times, according to him. Now, I think he's telling the truth. I think he's in the film three times. So we're going to find out more. And now we're going to go right to Robert J. Groden. Robert, are you there?
I'm there, Mark. How are you?
Excellent. I'm great because I've been so excited about interviewing you. I've been excited for days just waiting for this, and now it's here. So here we have Robert J. Groden, the author of High Treason, the author of JFK, The Case for a Conspiracy, and also the brand new book out only about a week, JFK, Absolute Proof. And Robert, I'd like to start, just go back to that date, 22 November 1963, and just tell me what happened that day to you. And let's go from there and just progress through how your relationship with the Kennedy assassination happened right from the day that it actually happened in Dallas.
Well, November 22nd, 1963 was my birthday.
Yes, I know that.
Turned 18 years old. And I did a Ferris Bueller type situation. I gave myself the day off. I stayed home from school, and I heard the first reports as they came in over the air when the president was still considered to be alive. His death had not been announced yet, and I remember some of those first broadcasts very, very well, and sat down in front of the TV and just was glued to it, and I had no idea how it would totally control my life, but it has. Started collecting everything I could on that particular issue from the moment it happened. I've always been fascinated by questions of history. This one here I just could not avoid. And that's how it began for me.
Well, very interesting. It's really kind of ironic that JFK was assassinated on your birthday. I mean, that had to have a strong effect on you. I remember, I'm 11 years younger than you are, and I remember myself, the first I heard of it was, I walked home from school. I was in elementary school at the time in Anoka, Minnesota, that's the northern suburb of the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and we got sent home, and I walked home, and I walked into the apartment building where we lived at the time. I got to the front door of my apartment, and my mother came out and said that the president had been assassinated. And that's one of those moments, like just about everyone in the country that's this age. We remember where we were, and there I was sitting in the hallway. And I went back to that exact spot 2 years ago and actually took a photograph of it so I could remember what it was like 50 years ago. Very interesting. Now,
amazing.
Yes, it's very interesting memory to remember right now, to go back to the same spot that was 48 years earlier was where I found out about the Kennedy assassination. I've got a photograph of it. The apartment building still exists. It's right there. It's beautiful, and that was the spot. But anyway, moving on. So the assassination happened on your birthday, and it became a fascination for you. And I really think that what you've told me about the way this developed for you, you felt a responsibility to the president and to the nation to carry out research and go further with this. And then in the 1970s, there was a congressional investigation. How did you get involved with that?
Well, I had worked on the photographic evidence of the Kennedy case on my own for several years. And in 1969, I gained access to the Zapruder film, the actual film of the assassination taken by the dress manufacturer, Abraham Zapruder. And in 1975, Geraldo Rivera learned that I had the film, and he called up and asked if I would be willing to show the film on his TV show, Good Night America. And I thought about it for about, 7 or 8 seconds, and then I said, yes, I will, sure, okay. How are we going to do it? And, well, we worked it out. You know, we taped the show in advance, but it was a decision which I've never regretted. I brought him the film, and We transferred it at ABC's offices in New York. And in May of that year, I showed the film on national television, and the public outcry was so great that I was invited to Washington, D.C. to present the evidence before Congress, and I showed it at the House of Representatives. And to my absolute amazement, Congressman Thomas Downing of Virginia introduced legislation to reopen the case just 2 days later. Just 2 days. Well, he introduced it 2 days later. It took quite a while for it to pass. But
yes,
he asked me at the time that should it pass, would I be willing to be staff photographic consultant to the committee? And I immediately said yes. So technically, I was the first person hired by the committee, and I held that position until 6 months after the investigation actually ended. So I worked for them for 3 years.
Wow, very interesting. And the broadcast of the Zapruder film on the Geraldo Rivera program, was that the first time that it was broadcast in public? Refresh my memory on that.
That was the very first national showing of the film ever. Some very poor quality copies were shown on college campuses and things of that nature that began with the Jim Garrison investigation in New Orleans. But a clear copy of the film had never been seen by the public. Individual still frames were shown in Life magazine.
Yes, I remember that.
And nobody really knew what the total effect of the film was, except for a handful of us who had actually seen it. And if you ever get a chance to actually see that original broadcast, what's amazing is the audience response. They just gasped en masse as one, the entire audience. No one knew what to expect. It had never been seen before. By now, we're all pretty much used to it, and it doesn't have the same effect. It's somewhat plastic because we've seen it so many times. We're used to it, but just imagine having never seen it before, ever. And that was the effect of the film. The film, that showing of the film, first on Good Night America and then in Congress, is what got the case reopened. The case had been dead in the water since 1968 at the end of the Clay Shaw trial in New Orleans.
Now, how exactly did you get your first copy of the Zapruder film? What was the process that happened there?
Well, Life magazine had brought the original film to the company that I worked for, and they wanted to see if it would maintain any kind of resolution, blowing it up from 8mm to 35mm for potential release within a professional documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And then they brought it to us. We had done work on the movie Woodstock, and had blown up 8mm to 35 for that. But nobody had ever tried to do something like this before because we used intermediate film, 16mm film, in between for Woodstock. But this was direct. No one else had ever gone from 8mm to 35 before.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked beautifully.
Have you ever seen that the digital copy that has been released on... I have a copy of it on VHS video cassette. It was released as part of a program where they did a restoration, where they did an individual photograph of each frame of the Zapruder film and then digitally combined them. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, it's the program is called Image of an Assassination.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's an examination of the Zapruder film, and what they tried to do digitally was to recreate the system that I had used as an analog technique.
Mm-hmm.
years earlier. I have worked now with the gentleman who was responsible for doing that. His name is Joe Barraby. Very nice guy. Lives in Illinois. And he and I have been discussing doing it again, but this time not using that intermediate step. The intermediate step that they used for that was to make 4x5 transparencies.
Yes, yes, I remember
that. Of every frame of the film. Well, we've been talking about going back to the original film and doing it digitally. just straight through digitizing from the original film instead of doing the intermediate step, which would make it even clearer, even better. But trying to get permission to do that has not been easy. We have not been successful with that yet.
Because there are some copies of the Zapruder film that were damaged. Some frames were damaged. And there's some interesting, you know, theories about how it was damaged and why. But I know at least one of the copies was damaged. I believe it was a Time Life employee, if I remember right.
That is correct. That's the story we've been told. And it may be true. What happened was the film itself, the original 8mm film, was cut twice during the original process of blowing up to 4x5 transparency for use in Life magazine. They said that it was, when it was put into a film gate, the film gate was closed over the film and cut it, that it was mishandled. And there's some reason to believe it, and there's another reason not to believe it. For instance, if the frames were cut out, if they were damaged, what happened to them? Where did they disappear to? Where are those original frames?
Exactly.
Which they've never answered. As a matter of fact, when I discovered the first splice and made that known publicly, they denied that it even existed. They freely admitted the second splice as early as 1966, but the first one they still denied up until just a few months, a few weeks ago. A new book has been released called The Day Kennedy Died, and they've revealed every single frame, very small, but every frame of the film, and they've shown both of the areas of that were missing. I think the thing that precipitated that is the fact that in my book, JFK Absolute Proof, I revealed all those films in book form for the very, very first time. And I think that they got wind that I was going to do that, so they've done it again.
Now, the Zapruder film, is my understanding, it was developed the day of the assassination itself, which was, of course, 22nd of November, 1963, and that there were at least three copies made that evening, and they were viewed by the Secret Service. Is that correct?
You could not have phrased it more perfectly. I'm saying that because officially there were only three copies made at the Jameson Film Lab in Dallas. The film was originally processed at, which is a developing process, done at Eastman Kodak in Dallas near Love Field, mm-hmm. in the airport. And officially, there were only three copies made. In fact, I know for a fact there were at least six copies made. One went to a television network news department. One went to a rather rich person in the Dallas area, and the third went to a celebrity who was really fascinated by the Kennedy case. There may have been many, many more, but I have seen two of them and was offered for sale the third one. Additionally, my copies of it, when I enhanced the film, I didn't just show the film by itself. I took the film itself that we had, and I blew it up and I stabilized the film. I re-photographed it frame by frame by frame, repositioning the president so that he is steadied. On the original film, Abraham Zapruder was a man who had vertigo, and he was having trouble maintaining his balance. So the president is essentially all over the screen, sometimes on the left, sometimes on the bottom, sometimes mm-hmm. in the middle. What I did is I blew it up, so I came in and eliminated a lot of the extraneous material around the president himself.
Great.
And I re-photographed it, showing just the president. I did the same thing with Jackie Kennedy. I did the same thing with John Connolly, the governor who was sitting in front of the president. I did it with a driver and Secret Service guard, and several of the important witnesses as well. Needless to say, this whole process with all the versions took a very long period of time, actually over a couple of years.
Well, those are very valuable research tools to have those different versions and stabilize so you can actually see the subjects, you know, in the frame. I would love to see those myself. I think that's very important, very good research material, and very important to compare so you can see what happened in the car to each individual person. So that is great. I'm very glad that you did that.
Well, I did that too. I showed these to the House Assassinations Committee, which was created after I released the original films. And we used those as study, which gave us a great deal of insight into what actually did happen at the time of the assassination. But here we are 50 years later, and I'm still discovering new things in the film that we had never seen before. Within the last 2 years, I've discovered two additional shots in the Zapruder film, which we always suspected, but there was never any proof of it.
Really?
Yes. There was an earlier one at frame 142 of the Zapruder film, where a bullet missed a car completely and hit the street. Now, how do you discover something like that? Very simply. A witness by the name of Jean Newman, who was standing there, told me what she had seen and where she saw it. I went back to the original film, and I examined it frame by frame by frame until I found, remarkably, the fact that you can see the bullet striking the street in front of a bystander named Philip Willis. On every frame up to 141, there is absolutely nothing in the street. Immediately 142, there's the residue of the bullet striking the asphalt in the street, and it causes a little bit of a flash. And then the frames after it show the residue landing on the ground and staying there.
Doesn't move
after that.
A quick question. Is not the bullet that also caused concrete fragments that cut the cheek of the bystander James Tague by the triple underpass, correct?
Not at all. No, this is a totally different shot than this. Additionally, too, one of the big, most interesting and exciting developments with the House Assassinations Committee is that something which we call the acoustics evidence was developed. And what that was is it was found that there was, in fact, a sound recording made of the shooting itself. And it was recorded by an open microphone on one of the motorcycles, the police motorcycles, near the president's car. Actually, eight car lengths back behind the car, but still in the plaza when the shots took place. And a computer study of these particular sound shots, including the echo patterns, the ultrasonic shock waves, the muzzle blasts, things like that, showed a potential for a great many more shots than the Warren Commission ever agreed to admit. The House committee arbitrarily eliminated some of these, which were legitimate shots, but were still left with seven shots. They further refined it to the point where it became ridiculous. They were throwing away shots with greater potential to be real shots than some that they allowed.
And there you go. That is Robert Groden. That's segment one of the interview I did with him on Monday, the 25th of November, 2013, as we observe the 50th anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy on 22 November, 1963. We're going to have another segment, the second half of that interview, on a future program, probably two programs from now. In the next program, we're going to have a year-in-review retrospective, and it's going to be a live roundtable panel discussion. We're going to have multiple people in the studio, and we'll be doing that on the air. 2013 in retrospective. Now, tomorrow is New Year's Eve, and then Wednesday is New Year's Day, of course. And all you nutty people that are going to go out and party on New Year's Eve, I want to play this silly song for you to get you in the mood a day early.
We like the moon.
Yeah, baby, that's We Like the Moon. That's by the Veitch brothers. I'm not sure how their last name is pronounced. It's spelled capital V-E-I-T-C-H. And that's from a website called rathergood.com. And I dedicate that to my good friend Chelsea Kingsford, who first turned me onto that song. I have laughed over and over and over at that song. It's just way funny. And I had to play that for you against the advice of other people, I might add, just to get you in the mood for celebrations on New Year's Eve to ring in 2014. It's going to be a good year. I can feel it. We're going to make a lot of good things happen, especially here on Spectrum 360. So remember, we want you to like us on Facebook. Go to www.facebook.com, Spectrum 360 radio program, and like us. Also, the podcast. Remember the podcast. That's at www.tantalk1340.com, 24/7, anytime. And go back and listen to that Robert Groden interview and get a second take on that. That's very important. I know we get a little silly in this program sometimes, but we cover a lot of important issues as well, and we want to keep doing that. Spectrum 360, we'll see you next week in the new year, 2014. Ow! Spectrum 360 is produced by Sunburst Media Productions and originates from St. Petersburg, Florida. Executive producer, host, audio engineer, and senior reporter, Mark Skokman. Associate producer, Terry Weeks. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. for 1 hour and online anytime via podcast. To access the podcast, go to www.facebook.com/Spectrum360 radio program and click on the program link. Or go to www.tantalk1340.com, click on podcasts, and click on Spectrum 360. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters and the staff of Spectrum 360. Listen next week for another interesting, informative, and entertaining Spectrum 360 radio program.
That's all, folks.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay. Listen.